What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Crossing Broadcast. We've got a great one for you today. Bob Wankel will be on recapping game one, talking about Dusty Wathan, Cassidy's new celly, and then we'll preview game two and all that. I hope you're having a great Red October. I haven't taken these overalls off in 24 hours, and I hope YouTube doesn't ban us for showing a little bit of skin. Let's get into it right now. First, I want to bring on Kevin Kincaid, who did a beautiful job of running the site last night. The hair looks coiffed. The hair looks feathered. The hair looks wet. I love it. You look like a really nice, well, I can't say, but I'm going to say it anyway, a Guido, because I might have a little bit of Italian in my blood. We haven't really, my 24, 34 of me, whatever it is, hasn't come back yet. And then I want to also introduce the founder of Red October Newsletter, the co-host of Crossed Up, a Phillies podcast, and the 2019 Inquirer South Jersey Baseball Coach of the Year, Bob Wankel, to the program.
What an introduction. That was beautiful.
No, I just got it off your Twitter profile, so I appreciate it.
Beautiful.
So he gets the big, long introduction, and I'm just introduced as some, like, grease ball.
Yeah, so here's this total piece of shit, Kevin Kincaid. He's with us today, too.
Looking like a total Guido. It's site editor, Kevin Kincaid. Yeah, great work last night, everybody. Y'all did a fantastic job. I just want to make that clear before we start here.
Hey, appreciate that. Couldn't have done without you there, editor. So, Bob, you were down there last night. And listen, we'll get into the game and everything. But I want to talk about the atmosphere first, because there is absolutely nothing like it. Scott Van Pelt couldn't stop talking about it on ESPN. Jeff Passan, he compared it to an SEC football game, which I think is like the nicest comparison of all time for a baseball game. The crowd's going nuts 30 minutes before game time during introductions. Reese Hoskins comes out while the emotional alligator got disrespected again. Okay, the crowd becomes even more insane. And then it's just stayed like that for the entirety of the game. I mean, last year it was 4 hours of hell. With the pitch clock now, it's 3 hours of hell. Phillies fans are technically in better shape this year than they are last year due to that. So I just want to say, like, Jazz Chisholm, man, he says before the series, no one likes the lights more than the Marlins. Talk to us about what it was like down there, the energy you felt, and do you think it had an effect on the Marlins a little bit?
Yeah, well, before I even do that, just anybody that's watching this live, I don't want you to be concerned about my overall health right now. I had to sneak a run in right before this. So, like, you can see the sweat, like, if you really dial in. So I took a shower, and, like, I'm just drenched right now. I got two kids, the game tonight, like, it had to happen. We're on a tight schedule here. So to your question, man, listen. I think even if you go back to, like, last year, I was a little bit like, yeah, I don't know. Like, sure, the fans affect the game. And then as the postseason wore on, I was like, man, I think the fans might actually affect the game. And, you know, you're there last night and it's 7:41. The Marlins are on the field and everyone's in their seat and they're just killing them. You know, nothing crazy, like nothing out of line, but just booing the hell out of them, making a ton of noise. And you're like, man, the first pitch isn't even for another 27 minutes. And then you got the Philly staff coming out. You got the trainers coming out and they're getting these crazy ovations, like ovations that guys like Jesus Luzardo and Jorge Soler, like these guys didn't get ovations like that after an 84 win season or any time during an 84 win season. Like, the fans were awesome last night. They affect the game. They're insane from start to finish. And I'll tell you this, like, we've all been to Eagles games. We've all been to Phillies games. I think Eagles fans are great. Most of them are the same fans. You're in the end zone. You're making noise, trying to cause false starts. There is nothing like Philadelphia baseball in October. It's just on a different planet. It's just, I've never seen anything like it.
Do you think it's because, like, we've been waiting so long for this, and now we have it the second year in a row? But I'm trying to, like, I was 15, 14, also kind of a Yankees fan back in those days, like the 2008 to 2011 time. Could you see comparisons to that?
Yeah, I actually think I can speak to this a little bit. So, like, when they were making those runs in 07 and 08, like, I was at every game, especially in 08 in the playoffs. Like, that was the first year that I was out of college, and I was just flushing paychecks on Phillies playoff tickets. And the atmosphere was awesome. Like, they were the white rally towels back then. It looked cool. It was loud. I honestly think that the drought, the decade-long drought sort of led up to this, like, pent-up, like, we got to let it all out type of thing. And now this year, though, there's like this expectation, like, yeah, maybe people aren't quite as starved or quite as hungry, but it was so much fun last year and so many memories were made off of it that I just think that everyone couldn't wait to get back here this year. Like, they knew what they were doing and they were like, let's take it up a notch. Let's take this thing up even further. Like, that's my sense of it. Like, everyone knows how awesome this month can be. And so they're just all in.
And me and Kev, we're pretty casual seam heads. We were talking about it. We were ready for the season to be over in, like, what, the first week of September, I think we talked about on the program. Yeah, we're like, let's just get this fast forwarded. It's kind of dragging along. We know they're going to get to the playoffs and everything. Kev, as a casual seam head like you and I, were you feeling it last night through the TV?
Yeah, man, it was awesome. I mean, dude, as soon as I saw those ticket prices earlier in the day where, like, Phillies tickets were going for, like, five times the amount of, like, Brewers tickets and, I mean, the Rays, whatever, you know, and Twins fans hadn't seen a win since, Johan Santana was on the roster, right? You know, so it's like, I knew it was going to be like that, but I've been on the record like a billion times saying, like, I think like playoff baseball, going from regular season to postseason, the baseball does it better than anything. And it's like, to Bob's point about the Eagles, baseball is like a better spectator sport than football. There's just more like singular moments to focus in on, more like ups and downs of like riding the roller coaster of like a lull and then a pop and then a lull and then a pop.
I was really worried about that was not going to happen because of the pitch clock. And I think they did a great job on the broadcast besides the ninth inning when, I don't know if you saw it, Bob, but the ninth inning, they just kept going to like the Diamondbacks game where they kept going to like random replays. Like the TV just glitched, but I thought they did a really good job of just like focusing on the fans and seeing the demeanor of people, even with the pitch clock being
they came on the first two pitches of the game. The fans were on their feet, like cheering every single thing that Zach Wheeler threw. And then they finally, like some of them finally sat down like halfway through the first inning. But I mean, you could have fooled me. It might as well have been like the NLCS last night. I mean, there's no difference from like the wild card routes or whatever. It just came through on the TV. It popped like no Eagles game pops, you know,
I don't want to show like geographical bias or like be a prisoner of the moment, but like someone just made a comment, like the Phillies fans were the reason that was in prime time and like the other games were sterile. Like, I don't know about that. Like, when it comes to markets and stuff, I think Philly's the big market and they have a lot of stuff.
Rob Manfred said that.
But so like what I look at with it though, is that like they have become part of the storyline. And like, I think sometimes like we do this thing where we like sort of pander to the fans. Right. And like, I am a fan. Like, I'm a huge Eagles fan. I love the Phillies growing up. And like, I obviously want them to win now. Right. Like, I'm not going to do the Big J journalist thing here and say like, I'm totally objective. Of course I want the Phillies to win, but like, it's real. Like, it's easy to become cynical and be like, oh yeah, sure. Red October, 3 hours of hell. The fans are loud. But like, it's a real thing down there, man. And they really do make themselves part of the storyline. And to the point that the other games were sterile. Obviously, I didn't see the game broadcast last night being there in the press box, but awesome. You like that little plug, right? But like, those other games felt sterile. I did watch those on TV and I just felt like a totally different type of electricity watching this Phillies team last night.
Yeah. I don't even think this is a homer thing to say. I think Philly is the greatest sports city in the country right now. And I think it's because things like Rob Manfred saying, like coming out and saying Philly carried the ratings during the playoffs last year, or we'll be in prime time all playoffs. We put so much food, including our food, on people's tables between the viral clips that go, that ESPN and the blogs can all break down. There is no place like this right now. Not New York, because they haven't been relevant for the last 10 years. They have too many teams. Not Boston, because they won too much, so it all got boring. LA, because they don't even care. Texas is too spread out. Chicago can't hold our jock. Philadelphia is the epicenter of the sports universe right now. When our teams are good, everyone has their eyeballs on Philadelphia.
So did you, it was funny because I was like, this is the perfect first inning. And then I see, Schwarber get the stop sign there coming around to third. I know Anthony went out on Twitter and said that he thought it was the right call. I was like, oh shit, he's gonna like.
Did he get crushed? Right. I heard he too many replies to respond to. I can't.
Yeah. I reached over to Anthony. I was like, dude, like you're dealing with very emotional people right now. They don't want to hear about like, well, here's why. Yeah. Here's why it was actually a great hold.
Yeah. Actually, a good idea to trade Brian Dawkins. Let me tell you why.
I'll tell you what, like the decision though, like I get it. Like if you didn't like it though, my thing was like, you better not have liked it when the ball was sailing through the air. Like you can't criticize it because Bryce Harper didn't get the run home, and you can't criticize it because JT Realmuto didn't come up big. I kind of thought they would send him. And here's my primary sticking point. I don't hate it because Lizardo's on the ropes. And the last thing you want to do is hit into a double play in that spot and let him kind of get up and get rolling. And obviously they didn't get it done. And it's easy to say this now, but Bryce Harper coming into last night was 1-for-9 with 5 strikeouts against Jesus Lizardo. So my thing is, like, it wasn't a guarantee that he was going to put the ball in play there. It's not a great matchup. Like, maybe you do want to gamble. I know the right fielder has a good arm, but I don't know. I just look at it and I didn't hate that one. But as the game progressed, I think anything that you want to say about the third base coach last night is fair game.
You do? Okay. I was going to say, because that double by Castellanos was insane, that Dusty was even going to hold him there. And the fact that he even thought that Bryce Harper, we've seen it all the regular season, that guy, nobody loves scoring more from first to home than he does.
And I think you've got to get – yeah, no, I think, like, you just got to generally play, like – you got to take analytics and all that shit out of it for a minute too. And you got to play the intangibles and think, like, we're playing at home. What happens if we go up 1-0 here? And what does the momentum look like? And like runs are hard to come by in the postseason, man. I think that's why people err on the side of aggression, and you say, send him and go for it, you know? Because likewise, you know, if they didn't, Turner would have went to third anyway. They would have had one out with a runner in scoring position and Bryce Harper coming up regardless. So it's not like the alternative situation was horrible. You know what I'm saying? So in that case, I can understand being aggressive there, but I was like, yeah, Dusty was like 0-for-3 last night. You know, I thought he was going to have to escape find a way to escape out the back door if they had lost that game. I mean, holy shit. Could you imagine what we would have been talking about today? You know?
Well, that's the same reason I didn't like the what happened in the fourth inning with the Castellanos send. Again, like, Lizardo is starting to struggle. It's hit after hit. He's just getting peppered and you're like, all right, they've got him now. And it just sort of felt like a spot where, like, maybe if you're going to be conservative in the first inning, you're conservative in the fourth inning. For the very same reason, like, you don't want to let them off the hook. And I know they ended up getting 2 more runs there and made it 3-0, but I think that could have been a lot worse had they not made that out at the plate.
Yeah.
Anthony loved the break. Yo, Connor Allen, right? Like, I got to be honest with you, man. Like, I was one of those guys that was like, well, Reger, you know, he's probably, like, more shifty in the open field. He might be a little bit more explosive with the ball in his hand. Like, I was that guy, dude.
Yeah, we talked ourselves into him being like the Eagles, Tyreek Hill, right?
Just trying to do what the Chiefs are doing. 100% loser take by me. Yeah.
They're looking for small, shifty guys. They're looking for, like, scat backs who can do it all, you know. Like, he's going to be our Andy Reid weapon or something.
The thing that I look at it with, like, the first inning with if Dusty should have sent him or not, is I look at it, like, when 4th-and-1, I think Kevin's the best at this one. If it works, it's a great call. If it doesn't, it's the worst call in the world, and we're all going to talk about it.
Oh, yeah, the fourth down flow chart, right? Was it a good call? Well, if it moved the chains, yes, it was a good call. If it didn't, no, it was a bad call. All right, yeah. That's a whole other thing, too. I have to thank the Phillies, by the way, for diverting some attention off of Nick Sirianni and Brian Johnson and Jalen Hurts, because there's a lot of parts that aren't really matching up right now. You know, we could be complaining about the 4-0, you know.
That is true. Eagles.
But I just thought it was funny because I don't I was sitting there watching them kind of, like, you know, scratch out these stupid infield singles. And I'm like, is this going to be another one of those, like, just annoying Marlins games where it's like they don't really deserve to be in this at all?
It felt like at times last night the Phillies were up 7 or 8 runs, but then you look up, they start the game 0-for-5 with runners in scoring position. They were only 3-for-14 on the night. Like, they had plenty of opportunities to sort of bust that thing open a little bit. But the only thing I'll say is that the first 2 calls with Dusty Wathan, you're like, you had to watch them unfold, and then you're like, I want to criticize this. The Harper one in real time. He's 60 feet down the third baseline. He's got the stop sign up. I have perfect position looking at this thing. Like, I'm looking at what he's looking at, and his hands go up in the air. And in real time, as Harper's, like, touching third, I'm like, what the hell is he doing? Like, Bryce, he was scoring on that play all the way. And I think what happened was he was like, I'm totally in my head now. I don't know what to do. But that was the perfect spot to gamble. You have a 2-run lead, you know, like, just go for it there, drop the hammer. And I'm surprised he put that stop sign up.
I do think it's funny because Bright, yeah, look at that.
I mean, that's insane.
That is insane.
You could have put anything on the third base path, and Harper was not slowing down, was not stopping. You could have put a brick wall there, and he was going through it. It's funny because he comes out after the game and very diplomatic. He's not going to bury his guy. And he said, that's my fault. You know, I didn't see him coming around third base, which is actually plausible because he was just had his head down. He was going no matter what. But I appreciated that quote from him. And I think he said, I'll read it real quick right here. He said, once I kind of got halfway to third, I didn't really pick Dusty up. So that was my fault on that. Usually when I see him, it's okay, I got to stop. He's got a really good eye over there. It just worked out in that situation. 9 times out of 10, I'm going to stop in that situation because, like I said, Dusty does a great job over there. It worked out that time, got us to 4-1 and gave us momentum going into the ninth inning. I'm not going to expect him to come out and crush the guy, but I mean,
that was Nick Sirianni's Brian Johnson. I was the one who called that 3rd and 11 play right there.
Yeah, what was more sincere, that or like the Chuck from Mount Airy shout out? Like, Dusty's my guy. I think he does a great job. But I wasn't even on third base, and I decided, like, absolutely not. I'm blowing through this thing.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like that's what you want, though. I mean, if you're going to go. Like, there was no hesitation there. Like, if you're going to go. If you're not going to go, then don't. But, like, credit to him, there was no second thought. There was no second guessing any of that coming around there, you know? Real quick, Bob, before I forget. The play on the second infield single, or the first infield single where Harper vacated. And then what's the coaching point there? Should he reach for that? And if he does Wheeler have to get over there faster?
No, Rob Thompson actually talked about that after the game last night. I mean, he wandered too far off the bag. Bryce is going to be aggressive. Like, just going back to the whole base running situation there, like, he's always going to err on the side of aggression. And that's a spot where he's like, I think I can make a play. He shouldn't have been out there. It was Bryson Stott's ball. And that's why Zach Wheeler's late, because you do have to, you can't take things for granted, but you do have some, I don't know, reaction where you go, okay, well, like, the first baseman will be home on this. And he wasn't. And that's why Wheeler was late breaking over. So, yeah, I mean, Rob after the game said, Bryce hasn't had a ton of reps. It happens. It happens to guys that have a lot of reps over there at times. And I think that that's one where there was just a little bit of a mix up, just trying to make a play. And he kind of got himself in trouble.
Yeah. I thought Bohm too. I mean, on that stop, like he almost would have had it if he didn't have to kind of like, he just kind of came down awkwardly and had to like kind of reset.
Yeah, there was like a little bit of like a quick reset and like on the transfer out, but a nice play to knock it down, obviously.
Yeah. Sorry, Kyle. What were you going to say, man?
Who gets your game ball, Bobby? I mean, obviously we got Nick Castellanos 2-for-4. Nice little ring finger salute that everyone thought was the middle finger that went instantly viral. I mean, Trey Turner, I know he got the ESPN interview after the game, but he kind of felt like he had like a low key game a little bit. Went 2-for-3. Obviously, Zach Wheeler. You know, Jose coming in and getting those 3 big outs, that 1 big out to close the inning. Who gets your game ball, you think?
Rojas
had a great at bat. That was an awesome at bat. Sorry.
Yeah, 9 pitch at bat, steals a base, helps him score the first run. Alec Bohm comes up big, 2 outs, runners in scoring position, something he's been great at all year. But I mean, listen, like, Nick Castellanos made the night fun and certainly was integral in what happened, but Zach Wheeler won the game for them. I mean, you know, 6 2/3 innings. He retired the side in 5 of the first 6 innings he pitched. They didn't have a runner in scoring position until the 7th. 8 strikeouts. I mean, when you're watching Zach Wheeler right now, it's crazy. Like, he really does stack up there with all of the top pitchers around baseball. And I still think that we sort of almost take for granted what he has done. I mean, you look at his postseason career now. He's thrown over 42 innings across the past 2 postseasons. He's got a 2.55 ERA, a 0.73 whip. And, like, I don't want to stat everybody to death here, but, like, these are awesome, awesome numbers, man. Like, we're talking about, like, all-time good. He's definitely one of the Phillies' best free agent signings of all time. They actually have, I think, a number of them on the field altogether right now. But I think Wheeler, when you look at the value, it's incredible. And I think that we're a couple more of these starts away. And if they win one of these things, you're talking about one of the best pitchers in franchise history. And I don't really think that that's hyperbole or getting carried away just because we're all amped up about the Phillies right now.
Damn.
Pache has the big hit. He had that catch on the first play of the game. I guess, I don't know. There was a lot of talk about the lefty thing, like, before the series, you know, and I don't know. I guess the only real concern there was if, you know, Rob Thompson would overthink it or something. I don't know. I mean, I when the lineup came out, I think everybody was kind of like, all right, you know, it's probably what he's going to do. And It worked out, right? I mean, I mean, did you have any thoughts about how we decided to approach it?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it makes perfect sense. They know that Rollins are probably going to be at a premium, especially last night, and you're going to kind of opt to go with the defense, and Pache is just, he's a phenomenal defender, especially when you get him in left field. And I think that's one consideration. And then, you know, listen, they had 11 hits last night. Eight of them came from right-handed hitters. Like, some of the Phillies lefties last night didn't get great looks. Like, I know Harper had one late, Schwarber early, and then Stott mixed one in. I guess it was the fourth inning when they scored those two runs. But other than that, it was like, it's up to the right-handers to kind of carry this thing in the beginning of these games. And then you consider what the Marlins are able to throw at you late with some of their lefty relievers as well. So, you know, the fact that Castellanos and Turner and Real Muto and Bohm, like, that those guys were able to produce, and then Rojas and Pache at the bottom of the lineup. I mean, that's what you need. The Phillies have been winning in the second half of the season with home runs. I mean, they've been unbelievable. No team has hit more home runs than the Phillies since August 1st. And, you know, for them to not hit a home run last night and still kind of scratch across four runs and do the job up and down the lineup, I thought was really impressive. Tonight, I think that there could be a little bit of a different story. You know, Braxton Garrett's a decent arm. He had a nice year for Miami, but a lot of Phillies in this lineup have really good numbers against them. And I think that this is a guy that they're going to be able to get to tonight, or that they should be able to get to. I'll say that.
Who do you think the X factor is? Anybody in the lineup, or you think it's our boy, Aaron Nola?
I think it's all about Aaron Nola, you know, and not to say that he can't go six innings, give up two runs, and they still lose, but it just feels like it's all about him. He's really struggled against this Marlins team this year. He's made three starts. His ERA is over six. Miami has a 1,000 OPS against them collectively this season. It's pretty nasty. But, you know, you look at those last two starts that Nola made before the postseason, you feel like he's on the right track. He has not been able to string together quality starts three, four at a time throughout the entire year. You hope that this lengthy reset that he's been given will help him. But he is the storyline tonight. I mean, this might be the last time he ever pitches for the Phillies. I mean, that is possible here. So all eyes on him tonight, and he's got to deliver.
Bob, are you saying it's not over already? I think the series is over. There's no chance they lose today.
I mean, I just gave you like the Ray Dittinger sigh there. You know, I don't know if that came across on the mic. But
that was the old John Johnson. John used to do that all the time.
Like, you went from not a big J to a complete big J. Literally, 10 minutes, man.
I mean, it's pretty easy to say like the Phillies have all the momentum. They smell blood. They're equipped for this moment. And I believe all that. Like, I think the Phillies will win the game tonight especially after what I watched last night. But like, I don't know. I mean, if it got to a game three, like, that's where it starts to get weird, right? Where you're like, all right, we're doing this. And then do we start doing the, like, it's the Marlins, here we go. Like,
yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, but I don't, Anthony wrote a better version, a much better version yesterday of what I wrote the day before, which was, what did I title that? Oh, if you want to crown the Marlins, and crown their ass, right? And everybody gets all nervous. They're like, well, don't jinx it. You know, you never know what could happen. It's a 3-game series and blah, blah. But I mean, like, I would extend to the Phillies the same thing that we do with the Eagles. Were the Eagles going to go down to Tampa and lose to Baker Mayfield? No. Are they going to lose at home to a team that they're better then? No, and everybody's like, well, the Marlins won the season series. It was 7-6. It literally cannot be any closer than that.
Yeah, and the Phillies outscored by like 20 runs.
Run differentials. I mean, the reason that the Marlins are here is because they were 33-13 in one run games. You know, and we sometimes people just gotta like accept it for what it is. Like, the Phillies are playing at home, they got the intangible advantages. They're the better team. Right. I mean, that's not a hot take to say that, you know. And that's also me not being overconfident either. Like, this team's been there. They know what it's all about. The Marlins largely, you know, they've got players who have the 2021 MVP on their team, you know, World Series MVP. But, yeah, I don't go on paper. Like, I wasn't, like, I didn't feel any of that. I didn't – even last night, you know, I think Soler had one on, and he hit, like, you know, one that I thought was going a lot deeper than it was. I was like, all right. But I don't know. I had that same feeling last night for the most part that I had watching the Eagles and the Commanders on Sunday. Like, I didn't really think that I thought there was a threat that Miami could make it interesting, but I didn't think the Phillies were losing that game, you know?
Yeah, I really think tonight just comes down to Aaron Nola sort of giving them a chance. Like, I don't know that he has to go out and throw seven scoreless innings, but just don't implode. And kind of going back to some of these season numbers, I mean, he's pitched 16 innings against them this season in these three starts, and he's given up five home runs. I mean, like, you can feel really good about it. But if he goes out and he has one of those games where they're down 3-4-0 early, and I know that they erased that type of deficit against the Padres in the NLCS last year. I'm not telling you that the Phillies go down 3-4-0 in the second inning, they're not going to win the game. But, you know, if he can give them that quality start, 6 innings, 3 runs, and just kind of keep them around, I expect the offense to ultimately be able to do enough to run past these guys.
We have to address something Ford brought up at the beginning of the show. He says, I love you, Pagan, but your Miller Lite video, while good and entertaining, you said Mirror Lite every time, not Miller. He says it's with an L. Craig, if you've got the video, I think we can corroborate here and listen to the phonetics.
Miller Lite is Philadelphia's beer. If you don't get it, get the out of Philadelphia.
We're here at Tradesman's in Philadelphia because the great people of Miller Lite are giving away the first round on them.
Let's Miller.
People are. Did you know about the free Miller Lite campaign here today?
No.
I'll let you know that the first round is on Miller Lite once the first pitch hit.
Miller.
Did you know Miller Lite was giving away the first round today?
I did not know that.
I just hear Miller. I hear Miller Lite, Miller Lite, Miller Lite. Now listen. Did I indulge in some delicious, tasty Miller Lights that were free that I probably shouldn't have more because it was a promotion that we did and I was a little bit, you know, getting fired up for Red October? Maybe. Or maybe Ford and everybody else just hasn't been pronouncing it right for the entirety of their lifetime.
I think I was with you early. Like, I think the first couple instances, I was like, yeah, I don't know. That there was like the third one in though, like that was Mirror. Yeah,
by the end of it, when I'm talking to the Braves fan, who by the way, just take the damn Mirror Lite, Braves fan. All right, it's a rivalry. I'm obviously doing a promo. I'm trying to be nice to you right now. Extend an olive branch. Just take the free Mirror Lite.
Wait, what kind of game is it? It's a rival. What game with the R?
It's a rivalry. I have a rivalry with the double L and the supposedly and the N'Kobe Dean or N'Kobe, whatever I call him. I have a rivalry with words. My parents, they wasted money on a Catholic school education. I should have just went to North Penn Public School, would have got the same education there and would have been speaking the same exact way.
Well, I mean, I have issues too. The first step towards, you know, correction is to admit that you have a problem. Absolutely. You know, like I slur words also. I slur S's sometimes, you know, it sounds like I got a bunch of marbles. It sounds like I'm a hoagie now, you know.
Whatever happened to, if you have nothing nice to say, don't say it at all.
Well, I can ask Ford that question.
Yeah, maybe Ford will pronounce that one right back on you there, Ford.
Yeah. Well, Christian says maybe you're just pronouncing it in Spanish, you know, Mijer light. Yeah. It was good, though. It looks like people were playing a lot. It looks like people were having a good time down there.
It was a strong crowd for a Tuesday. I think it'll be even stronger today over there. For tradesmen, for everywhere around the Philadelphia was pretty dead last night, but the bars were pretty packed, which was cool. But Bobby, did you get to go to the clubhouse? Did you get right out of there after the game?
No, I was down there after the game. Yeah. A lot of fog.
Post. Oh yeah.
It was like the thickest fog I've ever seen post game in the clubhouse.
Did you get a spot the Scotch circle? Did Ant tap you on the shoulder? Be like, hey, that's the Scotch circle over there.
No, he didn't. No, oh, Anthony actually, Anthony came down late. He stayed in the interview room where Rob Thompson was. And, everyone else was in the interview room, or I'm sorry, in the clubhouse listening to Nick Castellanos talk.
Oh, dude, I got to talk to you about that. I mean, shout out to John Clark. You were way over your skis on that interview, but I think everybody who interviews Nick Castellanos right now is just way over their skis with it. That is one guy that if the Phillies are like, hey, Kyle, you can interview Nick Castellanos, I would probably decline. For some reason, that guy scares the shit out of me for interviewing because he doesn't give you answers that you want. He just gives you direct answers, and he makes you feel like you're the idiot for asking that question.
They're really short, too, so you got to think quickly to have your follow-up, you know, or else there's like an awkward pause, and it's like,
because I would say one joke, and it'd be like being at an open mic, and I would absolutely bomb, and I would just fret for the rest of the interview.
I feel like he does this thing where he answers a question and he's kind of like, that was a question that you didn't need to ask me. Like, and he's kind of like evaluating your journalism, sort of like he's evaluating your question. And then you start to get a little bit uncomfortable and then you're in your head and you're like, what do I do now? Like, and then just when you think like this is about to go totally, totally south, he kind of gives you the life raft. Like then he'll answer a question and you're like, okay, I survived. Like that's sort of like the I guess like the trajectory of the Nick Castellanos interview.
Can I tell you a story real quick? I don't know if I've ever told this on the podcast. When I was at Channel 3, Jonathan Papelbon was on the trade block, or whatever. You know, rumors were going around that they were going to trade him or whatever. They sent me down to Washington. I don't know why. They sent me down with a photographer just to like hold a microphone or something like that. And I watched Jeff Skiversky ask Jonathan Papelbon the same question 7 times in a row in 7 different ways. And it was almost impressive in a way. As annoying as it was impressive, because he had a follow-up every single time. It was like, do you think you're going to be traded today? And he's like, I don't know. We're going to have to see what happens. What would you feel if you were traded? You know? Well, I don't know. I mean, I would have to be traded to find. And then I think the third one was like, did the thought of being traded cross your mind a couple weeks ago? It was amazing. He just had there was no pauses. There was no like, my thing is when I ask a stupid question and somebody gives me a short response, I just say, why? How do you feel about wearing Phillies overalls? Yeah. Well, I feel great. They're loose and they're comfortable.
They are.
Well, why is that? Why are they loose and comfortable? Because I don't want to be like the dickhead who asks like a question, get like a 3 sentence.
Well, I'll answer that because I'm not wearing any underwear under these.
Really? Wow.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm wearing underwear. Maybe I'm not. Who knows? I'll let the chat and the people listening make their own assumption there.
I don't know. It was very stupid though. And then I think the Eagles PR guy yelled at me because I tried to take a picture in the locker room. Yeah, you remember how you had though? I don't know if that's still a thing. You can't take still photos in the locker room.
Can't take still photos. Just video.
Fucking video as you want, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's story time with Kincaid.
Bobby, what was the what were the songs? Anything that stood out other than like the regular ones, like "Dancing on My Own," "Dick Down in Dallas"? Like any new ones that you were your ears perked up at?
No, you know what? Like we were actually out in the hallway for quite a while after the game, so. I think any of like the celebratory stuff was kind of done by the time the reporters were in the locker room or in the clubhouse, I should say. So it was pretty dialed back in there. Not a lot of celebration. Now tonight, if they were to win, then that'd probably be a different story. And I guess you'll probably see that on television.
Dude, isn't the best they just party after every series they win? It's awesome. For as much as we bitch about the 162 game season, it's the only one that makes sense. Like, could you imagine the Eagles winning the wild card round and then popping champagne and shit? It's just like it's the only one I think that makes sense. Or like Joel Embiid getting past the first round, and like we would make fun of them if they were like popping champagne in there.
Yeah, I think it's like all about like some people are like, oh man, they made the deep run last year. Act like you've been there before. I'm like, man, it's a 162 game grind. Like this team hasn't made the playoffs every year. This is what is it, the 16th or 17th time in like 141 years the Phillies have made the playoffs. Celebrate that. You're a 90-win team. You kicked ass last October up until the 6th game of the World Series. Like, if you want to go have fun, go have fun. Win. Come out and win the game.
I think more teams should do that, honestly. I hate that, like, I understand the mentality of, like, well, you got to win it all. If you don't win it all, you've won nothing. Anybody who actually is an athlete or works in a front office or anything knows, like, how hard it is to like, you could be one of the best GMs ever and never win a friggin' title.
But let me ask you this, like even that stuff aside, you turn on, you know, NBC Sports Philly last week when they clinched the playoff spot and you see them going crazy. Garrett Stubbs doing all his shit in the locker room, you know, like they're getting after it. They're having fun. And like you're sitting at home watching that as a fan. Right. And you're going like, yo, I can relate to that. Like, that's what I would do. That's my guy. Yeah. Who's benefiting from the Phillies having a subdued champagne toast for 5 minutes and then gathering their stuff like robots to go home and be like, honey, we got back to the playoffs, but I'm not going to have fun until November 5th when we win it all on Broad Street. Like, what are we talking
if the
about?
If there's two sides of the Venn diagram and one of those is fun Garrett Stubbs side versus like Seth Joyner, yes, much more fans go to the Garrett Stubbs side. It's supposed to be fun, man. Like I respect the like, well, the grind, you know, we got to win it all kind of mentality, but like, yes, I would love to see Jalen Hurts just, you know, smoke a cigar after they go to the friggin' Super Bowl or something.
Kev, if we get like a huge guest, I'd love for me and you to just pop champagne in people's faces. Sorry, Bob, we're not gonna do
celebrate everything. Yeah, I mean,
well, that's what I did after spending 5 years to get Joe Cordell on the program. You know, yeah. I've never spent longer trying to get a guest on anything, and it was a divorce lawyer from St. Louis. But I thought it was great.
You know, did you when he formally agreed, did you get pissed drunk that night?
Oh man, I got shitty.
Yeah.
Showed up with bloodshot eyes the next day. Like I'm totally unfucking prepared for this.
Just totally ignored your kids and just got ripped.
I went and put that right on my LinkedIn. I did a LinkedIn post where I said, we're happy to have the world's premier, as they say in England, divorce lawyer on the program, Joe Cordell. Joe was cool too, man. I mean, he told some stories. Yeah, he was telling us about like naked people climbing the poles at the Kentucky Derby, man.
Yeah, he's really big. Bobby, you have young kids that really can't grasp what's going on the TV. And Kev, I feel like the same thing right now, but like going to like, maybe you have friends that have kids that are a little older. How do you walk your child through the big balls dance, do you think, on television? Because I feel like there are a lot of people who probably weren't Phillies fans were tuning in for the first time. A lot of their kids are like, what is going on when these guys get on base? Because it was awesome. Guys on the top step doing it over the railing and stuff. Cassianos obviously went ring finger. That went viral. What do you think that conversation is like? And what do you think the Catholic schools and the public schools are going through today, you being a former teacher?
Yeah, I don't know how the schools are dealing with it, but I think just like with young kids, it's like pretty much like anything else. You can just lie to them and be like, oh, they're making giraffe gestures. That's what giraffes do, juggling. Baby. Like, like that's probably how I play that. Be like, oh, rhinoceroses do that. They all love rhinos. Haha. Like that.
Yeah. See, you strike me as a cool teacher though, but I feel like if you saw the big balls dance in the hallway, you'd be like, all right, that's kind of funny. I'll turn my eye there. I'm not gonna give a kid detention. But I feel like there are definitely some teachers out there that are like so anti-Philly, so zeroing in on people. We had that one guy, Kev, who you retweeted yesterday, who was like, show some respect, Nick Cassianos. This is a children's sport. You're on national television. That was wild.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that you're given the middle finger or the ring finger. Like, it's a national television broadcast.
I love that stuff because that's just people showing their true colors right there and how much of a fucking dork they are. Bobby, I have a question for you about Garrett Stubbs.
Can I just say something real quick here, and then I'll let you make the Stubbs thing. Like, this Phillies team, everybody watched the same thing I watched, right? They went up to Williamsport. They sat there and watched the little leaguers, right? Like Cassianos got them all bats from Chandler. He's not a Victus guy, but he's the other one, right? Harper went in and talked to him in the – I mean, like I said, nobody's got any – there's no realistic concern that these guys are not decent role models, right? I mean, that Marlins guy thinks that they've got like the 93 Phillies out there on the field or something. Like Lenny Dykstra is going to.
Well, they're role models too.
The people that covered the 93 Phillies, which by the way, like I fell in love with baseball because of the 93 Phillies. I was 8 years old, that whole deal. But like you come to find out like two decades later, some of those dudes weren't awesome guys, right? Like I don't think that history 20 years from now is going to reveal that this was a bad bunch of guys. In fact, like, and I'm not like the absolute end all be all to speak to this, but I think there's a pretty much a consensus from anybody that's down there covering them that by and large, this is like a pretty good group of dudes.
I don't see like Bryce Harper politically going off the deep end 20 years from now and tweeting about the Krasensteins on Twitter like Nails is. You know, I just like I can't see into the future, but I would predict that. But there was one guy who responded to the CB Twitter account last night. And he's like, well, you know, I got to talk to my little leaguers now. And I'm like, tell them that there's nothing. This doesn't mean anything.
I got to tell you, like, and like, Pagan, like, this isn't the thing we're going to like clip to Twitter. Like, you always manage to take like the one clip that I'm like, oh, great. That's the one we picked. But like,
you don't have to retweet it.
Kids aren't going to like kids across the Delaware Valley aren't going to all of a sudden just start doing that. Like they've done it. Like they've been doing it. Like I was a high school baseball coach. Like kids would get to second base and they would take their elbow and they would like drop it on the bag. Like, and then like the whole dugout would be like, ooh, ooh, like this stuff's been going on for years. Like the Phillies aren't like tainting the sanctity of youth baseball this October. I promise.
The funny thing is that guy who was probably complaining grew up during the DX crotch chop era, and he probably crotch chopped his teacher or crop chopped his parents at one point and got in trouble.
Yeah, that guy was growing up in an era when like women weren't even allowed to vote yet. I think he's like really old, you know. But I would corroborate.
We'll get to the Garrett Stubbs point now.
Yeah. No, can I just corroborate Bob's point really quick? Like, if people saw the shit that happened at Boyertown Junior High East in, like, 1998, like, we all would have been shipped off to the facility that the juveniles escaped from a couple weeks ago.
That's true.
We all would have been there, you know.
Yeah, Woodstock Greg, and Boyertown East. Those places were both crazy.
Oh God,
in their own right. Thanks, Craig, for pulling that up.
Your Garrett Stubbs point. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Thanks for pulling that up 15 minutes later, Craig. you're really good at this, Bob. We've always had this conversation about Reese Hoskins being on the Wall of Fame last year. And I think we got into a little bit of an argument. And I was like, no, fuck you. Reese Hoskins will not be on my Wall of Fame after, you know, batting 143 in the World Series. But he probably will be, especially after last night. Garrett Stubbs. I mean, the hype video was probably the best hype video that I've seen since, like, they were doing the Dawkins ones in, like, 2017, 2018 for the Eagles and some of the Sixers ones. Does Garrett Stubbs get a Wall of Fame honor? This is a serious question. Like, he is beloved. The pop yesterday that he got was insane for a backup catcher. He is now the number one. He has supplanted Todd Pratt. He has supplanted Chris Coates. He has supplanted Rod Barajas and Andrew Knapp for best backup catcher in Philly's history.
I have a soft spot for Garrett Stubbs. So here's what I'll say. No, he's not going to be on the Phillies Hall of Fame. We had an opportunity to talk to him, and, you know, we're like, hey, if we can just get like 15, 20 minutes. He jumped on our podcast earlier this summer, and like, he was as gracious as you could possibly be. Like, he gave us, I think, like 45 minutes. Like, he was kind of like, yeah, man, this was awesome. Great conversation. I'll come back on if you want me to. And like, let me tell you something about Garrett Stubbs. Like, I'll do the Chris Collinsworth. Like, here's a guy. Like, he's a guy that, like, he's a genuinely good dude. Like, everyone in that clubhouse loves Garrett Stubbs, and he's smart, and he's witty, and he's interesting. And like, he's a guy that, like, when it's over, like, when he's done playing baseball, like, he's going to be able to do whatever he wants. Like, if he wants to do sports media, he'll be able to do that. He went to USC, has a real estate background. Like, I could see him being very successful in business, real estate, public speaking, like motivational speaking. Like, there's a lot of things that this guy could do. I think that he has cemented himself, and this is a way of answering your question. Like, no, he's not on the Wall of Fame, but I think he's put himself in a spot that if he wants to do something in this market, any job he wants is going to be his. He's that good.
I'm trying to think of a comparison. Is an Ike Reese a good comparison? Kind of a guy who was like a special teamer for most of his
yeah,
career.
Maybe. And I think to some degree that plays a little bit better, right? Like, they always say that some of the best managers are guys that weren't star players because, like, they know what the grind is like. They're not supremely gifted, so they don't view the game through the same lens as, like, the mega talents.
And they're not criticized and scrutinized the way that the mega talents are. I mean, can you imagine if Donovan McNabb was hosting with John Marks?
Sure. I mean, everything would be just anti-fan, anti-media, anti, you know, I think that you need a little bit more of a rounded look. But, like, he's a super impressive guy. And, you know, what's funny, like, we look at him here, we're like, oh, he's the backup catcher. He's 5'8". And, like, he was telling a story. He was, like, 130 pounds in high school. And, like, he got a little bit bigger. But, like, he started getting some looks towards the end. Like, he was, like, that talented. Like, he went to USC, right? Yeah. Like, and he won, like, the Johnny Bench Award. He was the best college catcher in the country as, I guess, a sophomore or a junior. Like, it's not Rudy. You know what I mean? Like, this isn't like some, like, you know, oh, he got onto the field, this is really cute. Like, the guy was a good ball player growing up, like a legit talent. And, you know, I just think, I think he's really key. I know some people are like, oh, you can't have a guy hitting .195 as your backup catcher. Like, I think you got to find a way to keep him around here for another year or two at least, despite some of the offensive, I guess, limitations.
I wonder if he could switch positions. I wonder if he could be an outfielder.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's, like, the athleticism to do it, but, like, his value is that you can – I mean, his value is truly in that he's a pretty good defensive catcher. I mean, he just doesn't hit enough to really play him elsewhere.
Yeah, he was, like, the sun in those post games. Like, everything just revolved around him in terms of the party and everything for the celebrations.
Hey, real quick, because you brought it up, was that a swan song for Reese Hoskins?
Sort of felt like it. I just don't know what his fit is next year. Like, the Phillies have a lot to iron out this offseason. Because, like, the reality is, you know, we'll see what happens if they win this series, if they play the Braves. Like, they've got work to do to catch Atlanta, like, to really narrow the gap. I mean, what did the Braves win this year? Like, 104 games? They finished basically 2 weeks of baseball in front of the Phillies for the division. And it's, like, it's cool that the Phillies beat them last year. Maybe they do it again. Like, who knows? But, like, do you really, you don't really want to be 15 games behind a team either. So like, they've got to decide what they want to do with Rhys Haskins. Is there like some world where they bring him back on like a 1 year prove it deal? Maybe. But like, if Bryce Harper's playing first base beyond this season, that ends that conversation almost immediately. So it kind of feels like there's not really a natural fit for Rhys Haskins here, but you know, it's a shame because he's a great dude and he was a good Philly. And, you know, I felt for him last night. I think it's got to be tough, like getting that taste last year, yeah, knowing that they were going to compete and make another run this season and have to be on the sidelines. It, you feel for that dude because he really is like a class act. I mean, there's no question about it.
Someone who isn't a class act, Marlins man. Did you see what happened?
Yeah, he bought tickets to go to Milwaukee, right? He assumed the matchups, which I did too. I thought Arizona was coming here, but I didn't have to schedule any plane tickets. How do you not unwind that and get here?
He's a millionaire lawyer. There's a million flights to Philadelphia from Miami or from Florida a day. Like, I think he was just too scared to come to Philadelphia. I think he saw what happened to Mattress Mack last year, and he was like, I'm going to get the same.
You might be onto something because the guy is definitely an attention seeker, which is he exists because he seeks attention. So he was not going to – there's not a situation you could possibly get more attention as a Marlins fan than in Philadelphia during the playoffs. So, yeah, I mean, maybe he was scared.
Such a softy.
Do you think Marlins band pooped on the concourse?
Is that the first defecation we've seen from a live human?
Really weird.
In Citizens Bank Park history. Ask Burn Alley.
If you had to rank your postseason Philadelphia shits, like, what do you like? Is it the police horse, the guy that ate the police horse crap during the Eagles Super Bowl run?
Definitely number one.
Championship game, or is it the I didn't know I pooped in the concourse of Citizens Bank Park guy during game one of the wild card series?
Well, apparently we had the DM and the guy said the guy just kind of let it loose out of his shorts. And then 20 feet down the concourse, there was another turd.
I do have a question on this.
Gastroenteritis or something.
I'd like to follow up here. Like, is this like a, do we think based on the eyewitness account, do we think that this was like a, oh my God, I did that and I have to play it off type thing because I couldn't control it? Or do we think that this was a guy that was like, yeah, I'm just going to take a dump in the concourse? Because
now this was a plane going to Barcelona situation. We had to turn it around. Okay. This was some shit. That's some bad crab fries, some bad manco and manco pizza. That and this sucks. Is a guy who was like, fuck, I can't get to the bathroom in time. We've all been there. Upset We've all almost stomach, yeah. shit ourselves.
Can I say, no, like, man. I know, like, we're being, like, funny here, like, and there's, like, some tongue-in-cheek to this. Like, I hope we don't identify this person. Like,
yeah. No. We do have
we're not out here to
I know you're the editor, Paul, but, like, you know, yeah. I don't know. Do we want to?
No, don't worry. I'm not going to dox the person who shit on the concourse at Citizens Bank Park. They probably just had nausea, heartburn, indigestion, upset diarrhea. Stomach, diarrhea.
Ooh, unless we can get them a Pepto-Bismol sponsorship.
No, I honestly, God, my first thought was like, oh, it might have been a service animal or something, you know, like Wally the alligator.
That was not a service animal shit.
Can I tell a story real quick? Not much of a story, but Brian.
Jonathan Cabalbon and Jeff Skirsky asking questions for Jeff Skirsky?
No, Brian Hickey, who used to work for Philly Voice, he spent like, I think he spent like 2 years trying to get the horse shit eater to talk on the record to the point where I'll make sure I'm telling the story, right? I don't want to speak out of turn, but I think he got the guy's address and I think he showed up at his house, like knocked on his door or something like
on
that.
Horseback.
I think it was, but it was like very hostile. I think it was like a get the fuck out of here kind of thing. And, he never got the horse shit eater to talk on the record, but I have to have him on the show to tell the story sometime because it was like his white whale. He's like, I got to get the horse shit eater to talk on the record.
It's the story that the people of Philadelphia deserve.
Before I joined Crossing Broad, I did go out and I got the guy who poured the popcorn on Russell Westbrook's head, his address.
Oh yeah.
And I knocked on his door and he wouldn't talk to me. So well, did I relate to Brian Hickey? I also only spent a weekend. He spent 2 years. So
did you know for a little bit that when you Googled the practice of Richard Harkaway, the urologist who gave the double birds, his practice would come up on Google and it would have like Richard Harkaway urologist, and then right next to it would be him going like this.
Yeah, that was like the guy who was the plumber from Texas who sold his Toyota Tundra, and his Toyota Tundra ended up becoming a part of the ISIS caravan. And on his practice, it was all just Mark S. Plumbing, and then it was just ISIS advertising on his on his Toyota Tundra.
Now, some stuff, like if I'm a professional, like eating horse manure probably isn't great for business, right? Is the double bird to Russell Westbrook good for business?
He's in urology? Yeah, definitely. Yeah. In urology. Yeah. I gotta be poke and prodded by anybody.
Yeah.
I want to be poke and prodded by the guy with some stiff fingers like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Listen, I tell my wife that the one version of advertising that works on me is just to like bash me over the head with it over and over and over again. To the point, going back to Joe Cordell, that if we ever did get divorced, I would be calling Michelle Ferrari now.
He's licensed in your state.
Yeah. Joe Cordell's not licensed in our state. But yeah, I mean, if you're asking me about Philly urologists, if I was like, oh, I have like an infection here or something, he's the first guy I'm thinking of. So yeah, I mean, the person who said that there's no such thing as bad publicity, I think they were onto something. You know, so I would defer to that.
Wankel, anything else you want to cover? I'm looking down the Red October newsletter, which I have to say has been one of my favorite ones, and I've stolen a lot of stuff for content on Crossing Broad, so I appreciate that. And if you do subscribe and you want to become a new subscriber, Bob is giving away $100 Fanatics gift card, I believe.
Yeah, I am. We're actually growing this thing pretty well. So obviously you try to strike while the iron's hot. So yeah, people subscribe that haven't already signed up and reply to my thread on Twitter. We'll put you in a drawing to get $100 from Fanatics tomorrow. But yeah, I mean, listen, like not really. The thing that's crazy about this, right, is like an Eagles game, you have a postseason game, you spend 3 days digesting it and then another 3 days looking forward to the next one. Like it's go time here. Like it's time to flush. Yeah. We're 7 hours away from the second game. Like it's time to move on. Right. So we'll see what happens. We'll have a whole new set of things to talk about come 10, 11 o'clock tonight.
Yeah, who's your X factor for tonight?
Yeah, I mean, if I can't pick Nola, I'm going to go right back to the well and say that it's Castellanos or Turner, somebody at the top middle of that order from the right side that can kind of break this thing open. They're going to have good matchups tonight against Braxton Garrett. There's a number of guys. I don't know if I said this. It's all blurring together, newsletters, Crossing Broad articles, this podcast. But they have a number of guys that have really good numbers against him. So they should be able to get some cracks at him.
You like the over tonight?
Yeah, I do.
That was confident.
I don't know, man. I'll tell you what, I get into like a full disclosure. Like I can kind of get zeroed in with like the Phillies where I'm like, this guy's going to have two hits tonight. Bet him to double. He's going to homer. Like I can really get into a flow. Like I liked Castellanos last night. I liked Boehm last night. Like I called all those things out. Actually, some dude actually replied to me and was like, "Yo, man, like you inspired this parlay. It was like a 5-leg parlay that won." And I'm like, "Yo, people helping people. Like this is beautiful." But tonight, I just don't know. Playoff baseball is just tough, man. And so I'm not going to sit here and be like, "Yeah, hammer the over, block the millennium."
I don't know. I don't know if they have it on all the books, but when you get the two-way bet where it's like the game will be either team to win within X amount of runs. Like if you think it's going to be a two-run, if you think it's going to be a close game, I mean, you can get like the two runs or the one run for like minus 150 or something like that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually – there's the parlay that we were able to help the nice. People.
Alec Boehm probably get a hit. Castellanos to get a hit. One plus Alec Boehm RBI. One plus Nick Castellanos RBI. Good for them. And then something with Trey Turner, I guess, that hit as well.
Good shit, just run man. That back tonight. That looks good again. Nice. So, I mean, maybe
I
that
just hope, Craig, I sent you over the video of the guys dancing. They ended up confirming this. But I hope everybody who does set up a parlay today are like our good friends in the stands last night after they hit the team total over 3.5. There's about, if you saw the video, about 6, 7, 8 guys there that were just absolutely enjoying life. There's no better feeling than like, I can think of some bets I've just hit on in my past with my buddies at the bar and everything. And you just grab each other, you know, next round on me. Like this is the quintessential feeling right now. It feels so amazing.
Is that where the like the flyers were sitting? It looked like they put them up.
Oh my God,
like
the old, talk about that. The Flyers couldn't even get in the building. They had the Flyers in Camden, and they couldn't even get in a box. And everyone's like, "Why would you want to be in a box? Why would you want to be in a box? Don't you want them to be with the fans? They're one of the boys. they're the Flyers, okay? You think Claude Giroux, you think Mike Richards, you think whoever else was sitting with the peons in the 300 levels, not getting the free beer, the free food, having all the hot chicks come in and out of the suites and everything, you're an absolute
Listen,
idiot if you think.
This is all about making a connection with the city, getting back to basics. Shit. Building from the ground up.
No, I love this. That is awesome. I don't want them. So they haven't. First of all, after last season and the season before, they don't even deserve to sit in the box. I think they're just being regular dudes here, man. Like,
I like
Eagles go sit in the box.
How are you going to hate on this? How are you going to hate on
this? I'm not hating on it in terms of like, okay, the boys are buzzing and everything. I love to see the dudes. I wish they had more of more than Michelob Ultra. They probably should have mixed in an IPA. I think their calorie deficit is a little bit down right now. Torts is running them through a skating gauntlet. So they do really need to kind of build the calories back up more than Michelob Ultra. I do love this, though. It's great that they're showing out. It's great that they're, you know, doing whatever. It would be hilarious if Joel Embiid and them weren't in Colorado right now and they flash to them and they're in like some swanky suite with like the owner of the Sixers or the owner or like John Middleton or something like that. It would have been absolutely hilarious. Or like Jalen Hurts and Jason Kelsey are sitting next to Jeffrey Lurie and Nick Sirianni or something like that. Like, let's be honest, Cole Hamilton was in a suite last night.
I don't think they even asked the Phillies for tickets. I think they probably just bought tickets on their own and were like, fuck it, yeah, let's go.
They were like, oh man, only $199. Sign me up.
I'm flyered up.
Now. They were sitting there last night watching that atmosphere, and then they know that their season's about to start, and they're like, what the hell? Like, this is the same city. Like,
I hope it inspired them, honestly.
Yeah, it'd be great. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, but they know. I mean, Flyers fans will pack that place at the first sign of positivity, so they got nothing to worry about. You know?
They're sheep.
I think we're going down there. I'm going to try to meet you down there, Pagan, when they do the food thing next week or whatever. They're launching all the like new shit that they're offering at the Wells Fargo Center or whatever. You know,
do the Flyers let you around the building and the team, or do they have the Phillies thing going on? Where
the Flyers are good to me. The Eagles have always been good to me. Yeah. The Sixers are good to us. The Phillies just can't break the mold. Just can't get off the ban list. So
yeah. Well, Pagan is the only the only person, the only crossing broad person banned from anything at all now is Pagan with the Phillies. And it's not really banned. I wouldn't use the term banned. It's just you have not yet been cleared.
Restricted.
Right. Yeah. Restricted, yeah. Right. Because they kept telling me, I don't want to like reveal too many secrets here or whatever, but they're like, Kevin, you and Bob and Anthony are on the clearance list, or I don't know what the hell they called it or something. I'm like, I've never been there. I haven't sat in the press box in Citizens Bank Park in like 10 years. So what do you mean? They're like a security clearance. I had no idea what they were talking about. I'm like, do you need me to get Pagan to go get like fingerprints taken or something, or like a background check? What is
just to go shake hands with Johnny Mids and see the Fanatic?
And they're like, no, because the credentialing process. There's like a credentialing process and like some clearance stuff that happens at the league level.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you have to be approved like through the.
I would love to see Kyle in the press box, honestly, just with all the writers and
give Howard Eskin a knuckle sandwich, being like, yo, what's up, Matt Gell from The Athletic with that?
I thought how she took it right out of my mouth. But just you, Matt, and Marcus taking in a ball game together. Yeah. That would be.
Oh, my God.
It's fun, man. We got to get you down there. We can get you a Sixers credential. The last couple of Sixers games I've gone to, I didn't even go into the arena itself. I just sat in the media room, like talking.
I sat up one time with Ant for a Flyers game, and it was the most boring fucking thing I've ever done. So I'm going to say no to the credential unless it's a good game.
You did
get Charlie O'Connor, Ant, and Jason Martitis. I mean, it was a hell of a time.
Oh, you were in Comcast country.
I was in Comcast country. Welcome. I was in the nose. My nose started bleeding.
It was Comcast so country is where they sent the reporters who didn't get the vaccination. they sent them off to the hinterlands. Like every Sixers media member who was vaccinated got to sit on the floor, and they sent like three.
There were like three people that were up there, and I don't know who they were, but I bet you I know who they were.
So. Yeah, they sent like three Republicans up to Comcast country, and that was not that there's anything wrong with being a Republican. I was just using that for. Yeah, they sent them up to the auxiliary. They called it the auxiliary press box. You know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Bob, are you going down tonight, or are you going to go down for game three if it happens?
I have child duty tonight, which is unbelievable. But if there is a game three, I will be there tomorrow night covering it. So Don't worry, Kevin. Still will be producing the content, but I'll be doing it from the confines of my basement.
It's all right. I've done three straight drop-offs and pickups in a row. So I just want to say real quick that if anybody talks about gender roles in 2023, it's unmitigated bullshit. There are no gender roles in, like, I'm the cook and I do most of the cleaning.
Mr. Mom.
Yeah. Sounds like you need a Joe Cordell, my friend.
Yeah. Sounds like you need a trip to Switzerland in the middle of football season.
Michelle Ferrari, licensed in Pennsylvania and New Jersey. Offices in Radnor and Philadelphia. A partner you can count on.
Bobby, how's the setup right now? We haven't been. Is it NFL Network on the TV?
Nothing right now. I actually turned the TV off as a courtesy to you guys. But we're rocking NFL Network here. We're in season.
I love
it. And I just can't do the MLB content. Like when you, Kevin, I think can appreciate this. Like when you immerse yourself in something, like you don't really care what other people have to say about it. Like there are a lot of baseball writers in this city that I respect and like media people whose opinions about baseball I respect, but like, I don't care about them. Right. Like it's fair. What are you going to tell me that I don't already know? Like, that's kind of how I feel.
I spend a lot more time looking at,
is that wrong? Like,
what are you going to tell me that I don't already know?
Yeah, you're going to tell me.
2019 Inquirer South Jersey Coach of the Year. What are you going to tell me? How to lay down a bunt?
Perfect example of that was like Foley arguing with Matt Gelb the other night about whatever the hell that was. And I'm like, normally if that was me, that's something I would get tangled up in, but I don't really give a shit anymore, you know?
Yeah.
All I gotta do is look at Google Analytics, and we're good.
You're still getting in the mud. You're not getting in the mud.
Not as often.
Your hands ain't clean.
I'm trying to come out the mud like Paul Reed.
So, all right. Well, I can smell myself right now, so I'm gonna go take a shower. but I appreciate it, Craig. Appreciate you actually getting that in within 60 seconds this time, pulling that up. Very.
John Foley's a good dude. I will say that. I'm not.
John Foley's a good dude. Sure. I don't know, Gil.
Yeah.
Craig just gave you one of these behind the scenes, by the way. Did you see that?
Salute. I'm not even going to get into it. We'll go into a whole other 10-minute tangent. Anyway, Bobby, as always, buddy, I appreciate you coming on. Thank you to everybody who was listening and everything. Thank you to Kevin Kincaid. Thank you to me. Thank you to even Craig. We will talk to you Monday. Have a great rest of the day, everybody. Go Phils. Phils in two.